Hey, this is Porter McKnight from Atreyu, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hello, Michael.
Scott, salutations back to you.
Oh, greetings from New Jersey.
And welcomes from Georgia.
And hellos from Denville.
And waving to you from Douglasville.
All right. Sorry, guys. Welcome.
I'm not going to give out my street address. Sorry.
Welcome back to Verbal Shenanigans. I am Scott, and that is Mike down there. If you didn't pick up on our great intro, I mean, we practice these intros all week long. It's like when it comes down to hit that record button, sometimes the pressure's on, man.
Sometimes
the pressure's on to entertain, to be, you know, ready, to be on point, to really have a product to deliver to the mass people of Verbal Shenanigans.
After 200-some episodes, you'd think we would have had a rhythm to this, but no, not really. It's just one of those, it's like, oh, hi.
Yeah.
Welcome to episode, what are we on, Berlew? I don't know, Scott.
I know tonight. I know, we're on 241.
Oh.
So, no, I lied. 242. This is 242. We're staring 250 right in the face.
2 months from now.
Yep. Unless we just throw bonus episodes all week. Like I find,
oh, yeah.
I find the old short shenanigans of you somewhere and just release it.
Put out the Alien podcast. Our 10 minutes into our Leprechaun movie review before we said screw it. After I told you how many movies there were, and you're like, nope.
Like, no, this isn't good. But anyway, if you're just tuning in, that we are Verbal Shenanigans. Like I said, there's almost about 250 episodes. Kind of ignore, like, the first 10. that was kind of figuring out what this show actually was. Over the years, we've interviewed a lot of really tremendous people. If you just go back the last couple weeks, Frank Turner, Stu Cook, and even a snake milker. Yes, that's correct. Mm. Even a snake milker. And you could basically pick us up on any podcast listening app or internet radio or at a couple of different stations, Discovery County Network and Coming Right Up Network and that one in Pittsburgh that I can never remember.
WHBJ-DB.
I got to come up with, like, one of those sentences that lets you, like, remember things. Like, please excuse my dear Aunt Sally. You know?
Will he beat Jerry? Doubt.
I
don't know what to beat.
You were going good until the D. Yeah.
Darn, I have a DB in there.
Will he beat Jerry? Doubt. Daffodils. But anyway, welcome on back, Berlew. Welcome to the show.
It's always a pleasure, Scotty.
It is.
How you doing this
good,
week?
Man. We've been rocking and rolling. I feel like we've had a little momentum the last couple of weeks. Every once in a while we go into ebbs and flows, and as far as guests, we've had a lot of really cool guests. Apparently, we're very music-centric lately. We are very... Now, today's guest, he is music-centric, but I have an idea he's going to be a lot more than just music. You know, he's also photography and stuff like that and travel the world. So I think we can get more than just music out of him.
I'm going to just tell him to hum during the entire interview.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean... I feel we just have to just our key numbers say that we just stay with music. I feel that we should just be doo-wopping. during most of our episodes.
Scott, I booked a professional Hummer for next week. It's gonna be great.
Scott, I just found out it was not what I thought it was.
I booked a mute for the interview, but
this guy's interesting, man. He keeps you in suspense for the entire half an hour.
So I guess I'll start here. A couple months ago, we had a man by the name of DJ Bornshine on the podcast. Now, DJ was part of, you know, the ownership of a cafe in Asbury Park, New Jersey, called Catsbury Park. And while I'm talking Berlo, look up what episode that was. I forget which one it was. 230 something, I believe.
I'll get on it.
And so, long story short, we interviewed him. Very nice guy. They had the convention, and they wanted to do a comedy show, like cat themed comedy, and sure enough, we started talking, and I said, you know, I could get you some comics, and we can put on a show. It's not really a problem, and we'll make it happen. So this weekend was the cat convention.
To interrupt you, it was episode 229, The Cat's Meow.
The Cat's Meow, about 2-3 months ago. And so we had DJ on, and, you know, pretty excited. Just wasn't really excited because I knew it was going to kind of be interesting, but excited because it would be a story. You know, nonetheless, mm-hmm. It's going to be a story. You don't do a cat convention and expect normal, perfect comedy show conditions.
You don't go in there, just you come home. Hey, how was your day? Usual, cat convention, told jokes. I'm going to bed now.
Set up the lineup. I wanted to do more kind of rapid fire. I didn't think it would be conducive to like a feature headliner kind of thing. I thought it'd be conducive more to like short sets, 10, 12 minute sets, 5 or 6 comedians, boom, 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 get in, get out. And head on out. And I booked a couple comedians that they said they had cat bits. Our friend Natty Bumpercar, who I feel like he probably only does cat bits at this point. This girl Angela Sharp, very funny girl, but she does like acoustic guitar songs and about cats and stuff like that. I knew she would do well in hipster Asbury Park. So now I arrive, I get down there. You know, I was pretty nervous beforehand. I got to say, like, there's always a certain level of nervousness, which is a good nervousness before comedy at this point, but this was like crap, I don't know what to expect. Like, this could be terrible, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so as I'm arriving into Asbury Park, the entire town looks like it's covered in this gray cloud. It's just smoke everywhere. I'm like, okay, well, this is not a good sign. Like, there is a gigantic smoky, and now you're down by the beach, so the wind's blowing that smoke like everywhere, you know, like it's covering the entire town basically.
It's not the usual Jersey smoke.
No, it's not that nice that nice smelling Jersey smoke that we're so accustomed to. Now,
something that I miss here in Georgia, and I was like, damn it, I can breathe.
Do you ever like look online, ship down like some nice like carcinogen candles for you to like remind you of home?
Well, what I do is when we, instead of electronic recycle, what I do is I take the old servers and all the electronic equipment,
right,
and I set it on fire, and I just stick my face right in the middle of the smoke. I start reminiscing about New Jersey days, you know. I'm like, that's that beautiful smell. If only I had a bagel in my left hand.
Do you ever turn the car on and just do a huff out of the tailpipe just to get that taste back in your mouth for a few seconds?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to go to my carburetor and take a couple licks of it because, you know, you don't just smell it; it gets in your mouth. You need that taste, you know. You guys sit back and I'm like, I take a couple licks. I'm like, this is like Warren County, you know. I'm not pure New Jersey yet, so.
So, Shenanigans Showdown Challenge: lick your lick your exhaust pipe. okay, so It turns out there's a restaurant on fire down there, and it was just pluming smoke, much like the Notre Dame Cathedral today. I don't know.
If I heard about that.
Yeah, on fire. It was just
maybe we just have a new pope and nobody knew about it.
Maybe this is just God getting back at all the priests that have been through that church over time. So I get there and I show up to the Wonder Bar, which is a very very kind of iconic place in Asbury Park. It's a bar. It's got that face on it that you know from Asbury Park, that Bruce Springsteen had on one of his albums and stuff like that. So I get there and I'm looking around. Not too crazy, just kind of like a bar scene. And they're like, oh, yeah, I was talking to the sound guy, a really nice guy. And there's a magician going on before us. I'm like, oh, perfect, you know.
It's always a good opener for a comedy.
And it's loud as hell, really loud, like a bar. Now, I'm walking towards the bar, and I see all these dogs out. Like, Berlo, if you were there, you would have been gone. You would have sprinted down the street. Mm-hmm. I would have been like, all right, man, I'll see you in a few hours. Just call me. Just keep your cell phone on.
Kind of ended up at Seaside. I just kept going.
That Doberman was fast, man. So I'm like, oh.
Mainly because he was in the back seat of a car, but I got it.
So there's all these dogs around, and they're kind of in this outside bar area. I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. And I start to, like, out of the corner of my eye, see, like, a lot of, like, bulldogs. I'm like, cool. I thought it was, like, maybe someone who had, like, one or two. So I go inside, and I'm like, okay, cat convention. I'm like, where do I get my – I had to get, like, wristbands for the comedians. And they're like, oh, it's over at the convention center. So I go over to the convention.
You just can't walk into – there's top security at that cat convention. It's like, yeah, right. I need some ID before I let you in here, young man.
It's funny because you, like, talk to the sound guy, and they're just, like, so used. It's not even weird to them. They're like, yeah, yeah, cat convention. Like, down in Asbury Park, it's just, like, every weekend some kind of hipstery kind of event, you know? Like, there's always something going on. So I go over to the cat convention, the actual convention center, and there's, like, it's kind of pretty tame, actually. It's a lot of, like, just cat vendors, you know, like, you know, collars and food samples and rescue places and a lot of stuff like that. So
like a feline mall, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, like if you've ever gone to any of these dog events up here, it's kind of like that, like dog collars and different things and shirts and like vendors, like basically like a lot of vendors, like setting up tables and selling things. Now, there were a couple people with cat ears and cat things going on and cat shirts and...
were you able to see the line for the tattoos they were talking about?
No, I didn't see that, and I didn't. I saw pictures the second day of the line to see Little Bub, who is apparently a very big celebrity cat, like a line down the boardwalk to see Little Bub. You know who was also there? Fred Armisen was there.
That's random.
Yeah. Apparently he was like one of the hosts of the show that the second day. I'm like, okay, well, why couldn't you pair up the comedy with Fred Armisen? That would have been cool.
Yeah. What the hell, man?
Like, we could have opened for him. That would have been awesome. There's a line for Little Bub. There's a line for different things. And I'm expecting a lot more weirdos. But to be honest, I'm in the bar, basically. And it's kind of just more of like, I've actually been in that bar for like a concert back in the day, and I think I've stopped in there before concerts down in Asbury. It's not too weird yet. But
are you almost disappointed in the scenario right now?
No, because the nerves are still flowing because I have to still perform and put a comedy show on, and I cannot find the guy who's supposed to pay us. So that's
that
key.
Keeps you on edge.
Yeah. So, now the magician goes up, and he's like a real nerdy kind of magician, and he goes up, and a lot of people gather, and I even told the sound guy he's got to bring tables up to the front to make it more of like a comedy club, like, or like to have people like interested in the show instead of just a big open bar. And people like flock up, and I'm like, okay, if he can get them, like maybe they'll stay for the comedy show. And he does not use the microphone that the sound guy like set up, and it has a huge sound system the entire show. So he's just sitting there like yelling at the top of his lungs. People in the back are like, we can't hear him. Like, we can't. I don't know what he's saying. Like, he made
pick a what?
He made the audio disappear, if you will. So
what kind of tricks are we talking about here from this boy?
A lot of things disappearing and coming back, like balls and him pulling stuff out of all sorts of places. People coming up to the stage, counting how many of something there were, and then all of a sudden there's more than there were. Those kind of things. Like,
all right, so no Chris Angel we're talking about.
No, no, like putting cigarettes through cards and like picking cards out of people's wallets. I don't know. No, none of that stuff. So now I'm outside and I go and back. Go look at the dog thing again. I'm talking to the bouncer there, real nice guy. I'm like, oh, what's going on? A lot of dogs over there. What is that, a dog convention? And he's like, yeah, it's actually a dog convention. It's Bulldog Palooza. I'm like, what?
Oh.
I'm like, what? He said, yeah, it's like I'm like, Bulldog Palooza? And bulldogs happen to be like my favorite dog. My dog is a half English bulldog. I'm like, oh my god. So I like saunter over and I look over the fence, and there has to be like 100 bulldogs just like, you know, with their fat cheddar, like just walking all over the place. It was like if you were stuck in a desert and you saw an oasis. Like, mine would be like this sight. It was like beers in the back and just a bunch of bulldogs walking on their knuckles, like, you know, just like rolling around, not going very fast. It was an amazing sight.
So what's it like to be me for a day?
This is what I live with, man. This is you don't know my condition.
You need 100. I need 1. All right. Once I see 1, I'm there. I'm in the oasis. Oh, here we go again.
You're like a cokehead who gets that sweet, sweet hit, you know, after just dreaming about it, after being at rehab for a while. But so it's showtime. The comics have arrived. It's very loud. And I'm like, guys, let's just – now, also to preface this, I put my shows online all the time, you know. Hey, come on out to a show, you know, and a lot of times I don't really want anyone to come out to a show, like, especially if I don't know. But it honestly looks good, like, if you got a lot of dates as a comic, you're a working you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Sure enough, these people I haven't talked to in probably 8 years. Like, I know them from high school. We were friends. A party of four comes. They're like, we're coming to the cat convention. My cousin messages me, hey, I'm coming down to the cat convention. I'm like, Jesus Christ. And I like preface it. I'm like, all right, you might see a train wreck. I'm telling you that right now. So I, before the show, I just go up. Like, I'm just like, all right, I got to go up with as much confidence as possible. Because if I have no confidence, I'm going to be tuned out in the back immediately. You know? So I just go up, and I just start riffing on cat stories I remember from when I was a kid with my mother, and my mom was afraid of cats, and I just start riffing. And there's people in the audience, like, with cat ears on, and I start making fun of them. And I did 150% over the top, like, trying to get the room together, and I came off the stage feeling pretty good, to be honest. Like, there was a cat woman in the front that had 7 cats that was making fun of her. I said, the threshold is 3, right? The threshold 3 is really borderline being a crazy cat person. I feel like once you're over that, it's over. You know.
Now, how are they reacting to it? Were they like, you're using our word?
So I would say, so the front, maybe there was like 35 people in the front area. It was very loud, really loud. Like, so the back bar was loud. I went up there and I joked, like, hey, you know, this is perfect conditions for a comedy show, guys. We got kids in the audience. Asbury Park is on fire. You know, we got people walking in and out. There's a dog festival and a cat festival going on at the same time in a very loud bar. This is perfect, opportune time for comedy. And that started getting, like, people who were at least in the front paying attention. It was it was really hard, man. It was really, really hard. Eventually, I got paid, and we did have a good time. But it was just... It was a hell gig again, and we got through it, and it was tough. I'm not going to lie, it was tough.
Now, of the comedians you brought up, and you don't have to say names, how many of them did you clearly see they came up with their cat material 2 minutes before they showed up?
All right, well, I'm going to call out Mike Ciccoli right now.
Oh, the guy shoved in hell. You heard me.
Mike Ciccoli, I booked on the show because, one, we love working together. So I like to give
your redheaded beard buddies.
Exactly. It's Mike Ciccoli's birthday today when we're recording. Oh. This won't be on his birthday or anywhere close to it by the time it comes out. But Mike Ciccoli, when I booked on the, I messaged a couple people, hey, do you have any bits with a cat? Because they wanted, like, they didn't want just straight cat comedy, but they wanted people who had a cat bit.
Yeah.
I said, Mike, you got any cat stories? He's like, no. Why? I'm like, oh, I'm looking for comics for a cat convention. He says, I'm on. He's like, I'm on. I will come up with shit by then. He goes up. He does about 33 seconds of cat one-liners. Not like, maybe less. And it just goes into his normal routine. Right, and I hear him, like, doing really well. I'm like, that son of a bitch isn't doing... He isn't taking the risk. He isn't doing anything that he said he was going to do. But yet he's doing, like, really well. I'm like, oh, well. Bastard. And, like, all his friends came, too. It was, like, it was just weird, man. It ended up being really fun. It was a beautiful day, which helped down in Asbury. But, yeah. So the Cat Convention Comedy Show happened and is done.
Now, would there be a sequel?
I don't know. I don't know. That's up to the promoters. I did email them saying thank you. I do have some ideas that would make the show better in the year to come. If you guys are interested, we'll talk. And just thank you for the opportunity. So,
was item number one Bulldog Palooza only?
You know how unfair it was? Like, I just wanted to go lay in the middle of Bulldog Palooza, like, on the floor, and just let the Bulldogs just run over me like rainwater. You know? Like, I would
have... Get on the weird one.
Okay. I should have sold the comedy show to the Bulldog Palooza for next year.
It would just be you up on stage for 30 minutes just saying, would you to all the dogs.
My dog's kind of like you, too.
Ooh, I like you as well. Oh, I didn't forget about you. Look at you.
It would have been
okay,
awesome.
Okay, Mike Ciccoli, come on up. This show is bull. Okay, now here's the rest of my material.
So what you're saying, it would be a great day, is what you're saying.
Yeah, of course.
But no, all in all, it turned out good, and I'm glad I did it. It's funny how things from this stupid little show keep finding a way to, like, manifest into something else and, you know, turn into interesting experiences. We can talk about a whole bunch of them, but we don't have time for that, so... Because it's guest time, Berlo. All right, Mike. It is that that time where we're even recording on an off night because we're so excited about our guest here. We are.
Yeah. We had to bring in the entire audio crew, the studio folks,
right?
The publicists, the advertisers. I mean,
it's crazy.
The social media gals—they're just revving out there, sending out tweets for us. I mean,
it's crazy how big the staff has gotten over the years. You know, to think it went from us, like, laying on the couch with, like, toilet paper rolls to hold our mic stands, and now we're like basically a small business. You know, we got social media girls. We got we only hire girls though. Only hire girls to do social media. Security's here.
Oh, yeah. Hey,
T.
The office linebacker. We brought him in just to keep us in check.
Yes. Lester Spate, we hired to keep us secure as the office linebacker. We figured he needed the work. So.
Exactly.
But no, I'm excited for tonight's interview. Mike, we seem to be all about the bass players. We which is perfectly fine with me, coming from a bass player background, and it's one of my my favorite things. And I gotta say, bass players always seem to be kind of the interesting guys in the band, anyway. But so I was actually put in touch with our guest through my brother, who works in the music industry, and we're about to interview a guy by the name of Porter McKnight. Very, very. That's a perfect bass player name, Porter McKnight. You know, like of the band Atreyu. Now, Atreyu has been around for quite some time in the heavy metal scene for a long time. I remember listening to him a little bit when I was maybe in college a little bit, but you know, really heavy melodic music at this point. And they've really kept a longevity going for a long time. They just released an album in 2018 called In Our Wake. Porter is a really interesting dude. There's a lot to him, but I don't want to give it all away. But let's give Porter McKnight a call.
Sure.
Porter, first off, I want to thank you for sharing a couple minutes with me and Mike here. I got to say, right before you came on, we were saying Porter McKnight. It's almost like a dream name for a bass player.
I'll take that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I played bass for years and years and years. Now I just kind of casually keep up with it. But, you know, I was in bands and whatnot. And bass players always seem to be, like, the most interesting person in the band. I got to say that. So please don't let me down.
Okay. I'll do my best. No pressure, apparently.
No, but
yeah, you know, we always get, you know, can I cuss? Is that all right?
Yeah, you could do whatever you want.
Yeah, we always seem to just kind of get shat upon. So I feel like we're the ones that have to, like, you know, wear many hats or do the interesting things just to, like, be like, I'm not just a bass player, guys. I do this and this and this.
Yeah.
Well, I got to say, we just talked to Stu Cook of Creedence Clearwater. We had Victor Wooten on. And I got to ask, I love asking bass players, were you a guy that picked up the bass and said, I want to be the bass player? Or were you a guy that, hey, we are starting a band, we need a bass player, we already got a guitarist, pick this up, and then you fell in love with it? Where did you first grab the bass?
Well, okay, so I heard, like, early Green Day stuff back in the day, and I wanted it, and my parents were like, absolutely not. You need to learn how to play acoustic. I was like, no, I don't want to play that nonsense. And they bought me an acoustic guitar, and I never played it. You know, I played a couple times, and I was like, I don't hear distortion. I'm out. And then, like, 2 years later, I was at some New Year's event with my friends, and my friend's dad and his little brother were playing live that night. They were just playing cover songs or whatever, you know,
right.
Jimi Hendrix and Nirvana and whatever it was at the time. This was eighth grade, so, fuck, 1994 or something? I don't know. And they're like, hey, can you play bass on this one song? It really needs a bass part. I was like, I don't know how to do that. He's like, don't worry about it. It's easy. He's like, it's easy. It's four chords. I'm like, cool. So he taught me how to play Bush Little Things, and I learned it is four chords. It's very easy. I can still play it to this day. I was tested. And so, yeah, I played that night, and it was pretty fun. And then I played in bands with him that wasn't with his dad, you know, other people. And then I played in a couple bands in high school. Then I left for college and went for, like, actually for soccer and graphic design in California. I was born and raised in Alabama.
Okay.
And was like, didn't bring my bass or anything. And then ended up my best friend, he was like, you want to start a band? And so I had my mom ship it out, and kind of been playing ever since.
It's funny. Like, I started playing bass because my buddy who never played it that we were friends with bought it. And my parents would not let me get a guitar, and I knew he had it and didn't play it, so I just bought it from him for $100.
Excellent.
And that was it. And it's funny you say your first song was Bush, because I know you know my brother Tim, and you got to make fun of him next time you see him. He bought a guitar. He, like, always wanted to be, like, I think he always wanted to be a front man. And he picked up a guitar. He knew no songs, but the only song I remember him ever playing was Bush's Machine Head, just over and over and over again. That's literally the extent of his guitar playing.
Was he singing it too?
Oh, probably.
Like, got a machine head.
One of my favorite memories is back in the day, you would go down to either Great Adventure or Wildwood, and they used to charge you for like this green screen where you would pick up like a bass and a guitar and do a music video. And we did.
What?
Yes. So me and Tim did Pearl Jam's Alive, and he's singing and playing, lip singing and playing guitar to it. And I'm like rocking out as the backup guitar player on this green screen. If I had this video, I would send it to you.
Yeah, I was about to say, I don't know what your fan base is like, but I would demand it part of it. It's just.
I feel we should end podcasting and just do lip syncing green screens of 90s cover bands.
But
why doesn't that exist anymore?
But it has to be like the bad, like the green screen that you pay for at the boardwalk, like where you could kind of like see half your arm kind of fading out in the background and things like
that. The one where you wear the wrong color shirt and like all the audience is showing on your chest.
Amazing.
Now, you guys, one of the reasons we're recording tonight, like we're recording on an off night, you guys are about to head out on tour. And for those of you who don't know, Porter is the basis of Atreyu. You guys have been able to keep the longevity for quite a while now. Are you, as you look back now, you're about to go out on another tour for however, I think you said another 4 weeks. When you look back on when you first started and where you are now, how much of a difference is it, like, getting ready to go out on tour as opposed to maybe when you guys were in your 20s in the van? What is the difference now?
Vast. We've been a band 20 years as of this year, actually.
Wow.
I've been in it for 15, so I'm the new guy at 15. And I don't know. I mean, the nerves aren't really there. There's more of like a nervous excitement, less like a, oh my God, will I play this part right? Or, right. You know, so, right. You know, we practice a couple times before the tour just to get refreshed. And then we do, and we're like, okay, well, this is all just muscle memory at this point, you know?
Right.
Yeah, it's very lax because I don't know, we're professionals. We've done it a lot, you know?
Right.
So
what about like with your,
it's excited. We have we'll be pretty much gone till August, and we're just, we love this new record. We honestly think it's the best thing we've ever done, and we just love these songs. We're playing another new one on this tour that we've never played live, and we're just fucking stoked, man. It's just, it's a really good feeling around this camp right now.
Well, I mean, out of curiosity, now were you there when the band was Retribution, or were you a part of the the second wave?
You dug deep, though. No, that was I joined in 2004.
Okay, because I was going to say, you know, it almost sounds like the opposite. It sounds like the band should have started as Atreyu, and then it was like this big scene, and where like the lead singer's like, you know, this isn't just a band, it's a Retribution, and then that was.
I mean, Retribution.
There's still time.
It's a way better name. Than Atreyu. Like Brandon, our drummer, always jokes. He's like, "Atreyu's the worst fucking name we ever could have chosen," and now we're just stuck with it. You know?
That's like the guy from Thrice.
Every time, every time you ever say like, "Hey, music, what's your band?" Like, oh, Atreyu. They're like, Atreyu who? Like, Atreyu what? Like, they can never add you? What? Today at the post office, a lady asked. She was just like ruined it. She's a very pleasant lady, but she just could not say it.
I met the bassist from Trey Anastasio's band the other day.
Yeah. Did you say Thrice has the same thing?
Yeah. We interviewed Ed and Riley from Thrice. Riley twice, and
Eddie's amazing.
Oh, he's just the man.
He was great.
You know, they're like my band that I kind of like grew up with and have loved. They've changed with me. Like my music taste seemed to change, and they kind of hit it with every new album they put out. I'm like, oh yeah, that's kind of what I'm into at the moment.
We're touring with him this summer, and it'll be the first time since 2006, so I'm fucking stoked.
Oh, that's tremendous. Well,
funny thing about Ed and I is that we played a lot of World of Warcraft together. like I don't want to go into too many details. I'm not embarrassed by it, but I just don't want to confuse everyone. Essentially, I'm the guy that ran into the battle and took all the, like, hey, everyone, look at me. And he healed me and kept me alive. And so our digital bond transcends anything that we are, like, great friends in real life, better than we should have been because of those moments together. You know what I mean? Yeah. We're good friends in real life.
Yeah. But still. So you're saying you were the Leroy Jenkins of the group.
Just with less recklessness, but yes.
The next time I have you and Ed on, I'm going to have you both on as your characters from World of Warcraft.
I'm in. I actually had a dream last night where my best friend said, you want to start playing Warcraft again? I was like, yeah, sure, why not? And then I woke up today thinking it was real and was like, let's do this. It's not. Don't do it. It's heroin. Don't do it. I had to quit.
Let me ask you something. It kind of goes back to my other question before. When you guys, like, as you guys get older, you mature, 20 years, you know, 15 years playing, you know, heavy music, heavy rock music, I know it always seems – I seem to always identify with metal bands and stuff that don't take themselves, like, uber seriously as far as that. Like, even, I think of, like –
Yeah, that's us.
Yeah, yeah. I mean – That's what I was going to say. Like, do you guys laugh at yourselves maybe like 20 years ago, like when you're like, we got to be metal and you see these bands coming up? Or is it just kind of like over time you feel like all bands mellow like that?
Definitely all bands do not mellow like that. Some people are still just trying to be brutally tough. And you're all right, buddy, you do your thing. But like, nobody just listens to metal in our band. You know what I mean? We have a vast array of musical influences and tastes, and I think that is reflected in our musical path. We've gone all across the board, and we still will continue to. So, no, we don't take ourselves too seriously. We like to have fun, man. You know? The only reason you do anything in this life is fun. And so we take it seriously enough that, like, we're professionals, and we're going to give you a good show. We're not going to just go up and sound like a fucking high school cover band of ourselves. But, like... Yeah.
Well, like, I think of that question, I think of, like, when I get to see when Killswitch is playing with Adam and he's wearing capes and Daisy Duke shorts and just having a blast on stage. Like, that's what I love to see. Like, I think the older you get, the more you understand that, like, the metal is, you know, a great part of the music you're making, but it can't be your entire identity, especially as you get into your, like, 40s. Like, you can't be, like, metal all the time off stage.
No, I mean, to each their own, of course, but I prefer to have a smile on my face. You know what I mean?
Right.
Mm. Now, speaking of different styles, like, one of the big hits you guys done was Bon Jovi's You Give Love a Bad Name. Did you guys collaborate or ever talk to Bon Jovi or hear any his thoughts on your guys' song or cover?
No, but speaking in line with not taking ourselves seriously, we can't not play that song, it seems, by the way. Like, it just goes over too well. And so our singer Alex likes to have a little fun with it, and he'll be like, all right, this next song is cover Stan's paternal grandfather, or like every night it'll change into somehow Dan is related to Bon Jovi, and which is absolutely 0% true. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, we didn't have any connection with that. I think it was all just label stuff asking approval, and they said yes, I guess. That was actually the first song I was on with the band. Yeah, and it's extremely embarrassing.
now you not only you are a bass player in a successful band, but one of the cool parts about, you know, doing some research on you is checking out your photography work and your world travel. And Tim was telling me you grew up or you spent time in Germany and whatnot. When did are you, like, let me ask you, did that start with searching for photography? Did that start as you were traveling and photography was just something you got into? Where did those two worlds align? Because I look at your webpage and you have tons of different sites and places you've been to and a lot of really cool design work and stuff. Where did that seed start to grow?
Thank you. I think it's always gone hand in hand for me. I think music is integral in my life, but it's always found me. I'm not the guy or the bass player or the musician that just can't stop playing and sits around all day and plays bass. You know, like, I enjoy it and I love it, but my main thing in life is art and just creating various and assorted things. And photography has always gone well because we travel so much with the band, you know?
Right.
I remember the first time I had, my dad bought me a camera in like eighth grade, before the bass, after the acoustic guitar. And he like bought me like a film camera or whatever. And I shot, I think he instantly regretted it because I shot 8 rolls of film in the first day, which that shit was expensive back then. You know,
totally.
What I mean?
Yep.
And so ever since then, I've just loved it. Like, I took every photography class I possibly could. And, you know, I've shot photography. It's mainly been for myself and just as like a creative outlet. You know, I love architecture. I love landscapes.
Yep.
And as of recently, I've started doing something called the Photo Odyssey. And when Atreyu does a tour, I post about it on Instagram and I have people sign up. So I have 5 people every day come out and meet with me and we explore. I teach them how to use the camera or their phone and give basic ideas. We explore the city that we're playing in for a couple hours. I teach them how to post-process all of the stuff. I give them a photo pass to the show and show them, like, you know, the basics of how to shoot concert photography. And so
that's tremendous.
Really, it's been
that's
a
awesome.
Really, really fun experience. Thank you. Yeah, it is. It is awesome. It's really fun. Just to meet these people and, I don't know, give anyone the gift of inspiration and creativity. But, like, what it's done more than anything is it's given me a love for portrait photography and shooting photos with humans in it. Because right. before it was mainly just, like, you know, nature and animate objects, this sort of thing. But I started shooting portraits of each of the people that showed up, and I just loved it. And I just actually finished being a photographer and videographer for this band called The Sound of Animals Fighting.
Oh, yeah.
And I've never done either of those things before them, but I've been working with that band doing album artwork and photography.
They just played a few shows, right? They just played a couple shows for the first time in a while. Yeah.
We just did nine shows, all fly dates, and it was excellent. And I, in a confident and not cocky way, I did really fucking well and I really love it. And it's opening up a whole new avenue of like band photography and videography that I'm going to do whilst touring as well, you know? So this summer I'll be filming a couple bands. I'm definitely going to be filming thrice this summer, you know?
Yeah.
So it's fun.
It's awesome.
And what do you think is a harder challenge in all, making a new album or coming up with a full portfolio for your photography?
It's completely night and day different, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think a new portfolio is more of a burden because you're just sitting in front of a computer sifting through and trying to find the whatever images, and
right.
it's just you're never happy with it. But I suppose that's essentially the same with an album. You're never really happy with it, you know. Eventually you just got to stop or you'll completely just overwork it. That's just completely different. I don't know how to answer that. Good question, though.
I have been told that you enjoy, you like to do, during shows, you like to sometimes walk around the audience, like to take shots during the show, like to explore while playing. Let me ask you, have you ever, one, where did that start? And two, have you ever, now you guys have done some massive festivals before. Have you ever done that and had to go, like, had an uh-oh moment where you couldn't get back to the stage or had a hard time getting back to the band or had a mishap that kind of, you know, slowed you down from getting back to the other guys?
Certainly. It spurred from wanting that connection with the fans.
Right.
Because what else is the point? You know what I mean? Like, it's really silly if the bands don't feel connected to the fans don't feel connected to the band. You know what I mean?
Correct.
And if we don't have fans, we're just 5 dudes running around like assholes on a stage to no one.
Right.
So I think that finding that connection with the fan base is the most important thing bands could possibly do. And so I think it just spurred from that, just wanting to connect to them. Like, so when there's songs that I don't have to sing, because I do a lot of singing in the trio as well.
Yep.
I'm like, fuck it, I'm going out there. I'm bored now, you know? So I'll just run out and have the go into the circle pit, have them circle pit around me, or you know, just whatever works. And so as far as troubled circumstances, Warped Tour 2016 got a little hairy sometimes. It's always weird when people don't recognize you. Usually someone will see me and they'll like try and help, like navigate, you know, because I don't like when security follows me because I feel like this pompous guy or like I'm better than them. You know what I mean? Or something right. like that. So usually it gets a little bit hairy if like people are just still pitting and they're just blindly like, you know, bulldozing around. But I think the times when you're playing festivals like what was the one we played fairly recently? Was it Download or Reading? No, it wasn't Reading. It's a big, big old festival in Europe somewhere. And, you know, like a sea of like 60,000 people watching us. It was insane.
That's amazing.
And I tried to make it down, but I can't. The stage is too tall to go off the front like I normally would. So I would have to sprint around this side. Literally, I'm playing the song and sprinting. And sprint. I'm wearing as well because it's like I'm wearing like big old boots because I knew how muddy and nasty it was out there. And I would just get stuck in my normal boots. So I'm wearing like waterproof boots that day, and it's just I go in. Everybody's like, "What the fuck? What is he doing out here?" And they're like raging, and they love it so much. And the song is like getting close to done. I'm like, "I gotta go, get the fuck out of the way!" And I'm like sprinting, and I look down, and I'm like, "There's mud up to my knees," and I'm just like I took my bass off and was just sprinting. The song's done. I'm like, and I luckily the next song. Was it's a song called Do You Know You Are, and I have like a minute till the bass and I start singing, so I was just like go, and I like tossed my bass to my tech and he tosses the other one to me.
That's like, hilarious.
So there's been moments like that where I was just like I greatly underestimated the distance to the crowd.
You just in between songs and now it's all right. I lost my boot somewhere, everyone. See my boot. Growing
up here. Can we turn the house lights on? I lost a boot. I'll tell you though, that kind of stuff, like you said, connecting with the fans does make you remember things. I will never forget. When I was in high school, I saw the Foo Fighters and the Red Hot Chili Peppers at PNC Arts Center, and Dave Grohl came walking around the PNC Arts Center playing My Hero. They just like extended the intro for a long, long time. And all of a sudden he just like was walking around. He was in the lawn. He was like stepping up on the and like to this day, that sticks out to me like, wow, that was a really cool moment. Like he didn't have to do that. So I'm sure you get, you know, you get fans who do appreciate that. So, with your boots and all. So.
Yeah, I mean, it just shows that you're a real person.
Yep.
You know, like, I'm not some glorified dude up there with a long beard, you know? Like, right. I'm exactly like they are, and there's no difference between us.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all just there to have a great time, you know? And, like, how infinitely grateful my band and I are for their support, you know?
Yeah. Now, you've done so much toying around. What do you think is the most underrated metal rock city out there where like you tell people, oh, we had a great show at blah blah blah, and they're like, there no way.
I think for a while Orlando, Florida was just like insane. Like
Mickey Mouse is there banging his head after the shift.
Yeah, you know? I don't know what it was about. It was the House of Blues Orlando in the middle of Mickeyville. Yeah, I think that would be one that was just like, what? Everybody's like, Orlando? Okay. Lubbock, Texas is actually really, really good too. I don't know. I love playing the major markets like we did on our last headliner. But one we're leaving on now is called we're doing a tertiary market tour. So it's a lot smaller places like Lubbock, New Orleans, Odessa, Texas, Grand Rapids, and all of those shows are just another tier of it. I feel like the fans are a little bit more like, they came, they're here. whereas like in New York where they can go to shows every night, maybe. Right. I don't know. They're all amazing. I don't want to insult them.
Obviously.
Now, like a creep, I was checking out your Instagram a little bit. And so you got married last year. You're coming up almost on a year. I'm getting married in 2 weeks, but I had I always wonder, one of my favorite things to ask musicians and people who are entertainers and people who tour and whatnot, how does the family dynamic work with you? Maybe like just you personally, but like when people in the band either have kids or wives or whatnot, and you're going for long tours, how is that? How do you manage that? How do you manage a relationship? And I mean, I'm sure she knows you. That's kind of what you do all along. But how does that change once you're trying to manage a family and you're going off to Europe and you're going here and there and whatnot? What is your like strategy to keep things, you know, together?
I mean, it's tough. I'm not gonna lie, and especially like our drummer and singer both have two kids now, so I can't even fathom how hard that is.
Mm-hmm.
So my wife and I, we just try and communicate as much as possible, you know, and FaceTime as much as possible, but especially when, because she's German, mm-hmm. and she actually just as of like a week and a half ago, 2 weeks, just got her U.S. residency.
Nice.
So she's been, I mean, we've pretty much been apart for most of the time since we've been married.
Wow.
So it's tough, man. And especially with a 9-hour difference, you know, cause she'd be done with her day at like 3 PM and then I would go and play a show.
Yeah.
And then I'd be in bed before she was awake. So it was tough, very tough to coordinate. But sometimes you feel like a stranger, you know, mm-hmm. and you're like trying to give like a recap of your day and show them like, hey, I did this. But like, also, like, if, you know, for instance, if she's in Germany and it's cold and it's wet and she has work and she sees all these fun things I'm doing, she gets a little jealous, too, because she wants to be out. You know?
Right.
So it's always an interesting dynamic of trying to just keep that connection going. I think all musicians, like, we leave for a living, you know, like we kind of have cold hearts in that
good
way.
Saying.
We're like,
we're
always gone, you know, so like. If I do maintain a friendship with you, like I'm actually trying. So you know what I mean?
Right.
Cause I just forget and I'm just more present in a good way, I guess, that I'm in this moment and then I'm not there anymore, you know, but we make it work and she married me. So, you know, that's cool. And she joins,
she doesn't think so, but yeah.
she joins for like a little over a week on the last tour. She's going to join for the last like 10 days of this tour. The next one we do after this is in Europe. So she's going to come out in Europe and then we're going to stay for a couple of days with her parents in Germany. And then we have 4 weeks in the States. So she'll come for like a week on that. But also like you got to respect the space on the bus and you can't just have your significant other on the bus all the time because that's just another body. Bus full of 10 people already and it is work so you got to find the healthy balance of these life events with your peoples.
Just out of curiosity, you know, in your head, how long do you think you want to go, or do you have a plan as to I want to do music for so long, or maybe move more to photography or find something new? Do you have a future plan in your head?
No, I'll have music as long as it'll have me.
Perfect.
And there will always be music in my life, you know, and I will play. And I know what you have the same view on it. We will play as long as people want us to play. And then we're going to keep writing albums and we're going to keep going. Like we love writing music and we love touring with each other.
Awesome.
So we want to do it as long as, you know, our throats and backs can let us. So I can always work my artistic world into the band. Like I did the album Long Live. I did the entire album artwork and packaging for that and all of the design for that cycle. I wrote and directed the music video for this newest one. I art directed the entire thing and hired an illustrator for the cover and the other two illustrations. And I did all of the other stuff, you know, so I've been working hand in hand with all these new videos on this cycle. So like it all ties together. You know, and I think it's all better in a symbiotic world than me just like purely doing one of them.
Right.
I think I would get sick if I was just a photographer. I would hate my life. You know, I like doing all these variations and I love doing all these things. That being said, I have a bazillion ideas for physical art pieces that I have no stationary time to get done. But, you know, eventually that'll come. And we just moved to Alabama, back to my family home. So I have some space and time to build out a studio there. And yeah, it's awesome. I'm stoked. My wife and I are going to collaborate on a lot of stuff. And yeah, it's I've kind of always lived my life without structure, and my fucking parents hated that. They can't comprehend it. You know what I mean? Most people I know can't comprehend it. Can't comprehend it. But I don't know. I've lived a lot based on intuition and trusting my gut and letting things that I want find me. Hey, kitty. Whose is that?
That's actually just
that's mine.
That's actually just Mike. When he gets excited during interviews, that's the sound he makes.
You like this conversation so much.
I gave you three meows. It's going pretty well, my friend.
Mike, right. Calm down. Order. Calm down, Mike. Calm down.
But like I said, music has always found me. Like, how I even joined Atreyu was I was in college and I was in this band with some people in Yorba Linda that's where the band's Atreyu's from, and they knew the Atreyu guys, so I had met them, you know. And I was in that band, and I left school actually for that band. And then, like, I don't want to talk about too bad things too much, but some shit went down,
right?
And it was about 2 weeks after the new semester of school had started, so there was like no, and I was like, do I leave this band, do I stay, like, do I just left school for this, like, do I persevere, but they did this, like, fuck, what do I do?
Right.
And I was like, you know what? I don't even like music. I have a job. I was working in like a publications office on campus as a photographer and a designer.
Nice.
And I was like, I'll just go back to work and then I'll go back to school in the fall, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I left it and I made that right choice. I was like, you know what? This doesn't feel right. I would just be doing it for the wrong reasons. So I can't do this anymore, guys. And that was my first real true like understanding and an example of when you trust that feeling that you have inside you in that path, it'll always something will open up for you. Because 4 days later Atreyu called and we're like, hey, you want to join our band? And I was like, all right, okay. Yeah, I guess I do like music, you know what I mean? And that's just kind of been the case throughout my life. Like, I want something, or like, not want in like a greedy desire way, but like, I want a new camera, or I want to do an art project, you know, and I just kind of trust that it'll happen because that's what I want out of this life. And then somehow it finds me in one way or shape or form. And I don't sit there and worry about it every 2 seconds. Like, oh, where's this next paycheck going to come from? Oh my God. It's like, I'll have like, okay, cool. Like, I really want to go to Europe this summer. And then somehow some band will ask me to go to Europe this summer. You know what I mean? It always works out. And I've always trusted that way. And, you know, it's not always easy, but it's the only way I know, and it's very exciting.
Yeah.
It's led me to some weird, weird fucking places like Iceland and Chernobyl and Ethiopia and
this podcast. No.
Yeah, exactly. This is all part of the weirdness.
Yes. Yeah. Now, Porter, we'd be remiss if we didn't we didn't talk about your tremendous beard. You have a beard that is glorious. You're a fellow ginger beard like myself, but yours is.
I did not know that you were a ginger. This conversation could have been completely different.
Yeah, we just talk about ginger issues all day long.
Yeah, I just sit in the background since I have dirty blonde hair, being sad as I listen to YouTube chat.
It should have been the two of us.
Yes. Now, I tried to make, instead of asking you the stereotypical beard questions, I tried to come up with like five quick non-hacky beard questions for you. Okay.
Oh, this is interesting.
Yeah.
This is fun.
Because I know you probably get like, how long have you had that beard? You're like, how do you do to take care of it? All that other crap. So I have a couple that I would like you to answer. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Have you ever had a dream or a nightmare where your beard was gone?
I just love how stoked you were when you started that. Yes.
So
I certainly have. I've had those moments where I wake up and I reach down like, oh fuck, thank God. Yeah, like I've definitely.
Okay.
That's it's not a real fear.
Right.
You know, like my drummer Brandon sometimes joke, he's like, what would you do if like you just woke up and I like tapped you on the shoulder, I was like, fuck you, Porter. And it's Snip. I was like, I honestly, I would fucking shit in your pillow. Like, I don't know what I would do. The retribution would be so incomprehensible. Like,
Okay. Have you ever attempted to lift heavy objects with your beard? And if so, what?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
It's more painful than people think. And one time in 2013, my best friend and a couple friends and I went to Manchester United versus the LA Galaxy in LA.
Yep.
And we got very fucking hammered. And he thought I don't know, long story short, he thought I hit him in the head with a parking cone.
Natural segue. Yep.
I may have. I'm not sure. I don't think I did. I think it was our other friend. But he grabbed my beard and ripped. And the pain that I felt emotionally and physically was, you know, as I'm just grabbing it and just hair. Oh, it's very unpleasant, man. So, no, I take great care of this thing, and I would never, like, people are like, you should flat iron your beard. I'm like, no, I'm not rude to this hair. Thank you, though.
On a side note, the world record for lifting something with your beard is 140 pounds.
Huh. That's a thing?
That's like one emo kid. You guys could find one in the audience.
Next time the crowd goes nuts in Orlando, it's like, all right, I'm going to pull this out, guys.
Come back on stage with a kid in your beard. All right. Have you ever got your beard caught in a door or something that closed?
Yes. Doors. And zippers are a fucking pain in the ass.
Oh.
It's a real thing. Getting up sometimes out of bed, you'll like use your arm to prop, like, ah, fuck. Like, rip all these hairs out.
Okay. What's the weirdest thing you guys have ever had to do for a photo shoot with your beard? Has anybody ever had to come spray product in it or shine lights on it strangely or take a weird angle of it? What's the strangest thing for a photo shoot you've had to do with your beard?
I think people don't understand how the wind affects it. So, like, it'll just, you know, they'll have, like, a fan for – because it's hot, and it'll just be, like, over my shoulder. I always have, like, if there's a makeup person, I'm like, could you just keep an eye on my beard? Because it has a mind of its own. Like, if you ever see us live, I have a beard comb on the side stage just ready because it's everywhere. It's a fucking maniac. Sorry for this, the house going. Ringing in the back.
Yeah, no problem. All right, two more. Have you ever been in one time zone and your beard's been in another?
No, but I have a new goal.
Got to the border of Georgia. No, we're on the Eastern Standard Time. It's like,
What's that, four corners? Maybe he could do a photo with his beard in four states at once.
I definitely can do this.
That's tremendous.
Just like face plant and octopus the thing out. Yeah, let's do this.
All right. Last one. As a photographer, have you ever went for the perfect shot and it was ruined by your beard swinging into the shot, obscuring what you were going for?
No. But I've gone to change lenses and I've closed my beard in the camera. I'll have like a quick moment and I'll change the lens and I'll like reach up to shoot it and it's like, you know, and I have to sit there and like redo it and like blow out the broken strands of beard inside the sensor. Yeah.
Nice.
I was thinking of the weirdest photo shoot I've done. Right. I filmed, my best friend keeps coming up a lot in this story, but the same guy that ripped it out and I joined a band with in California. We filmed a movie in Africa and they were very confused by the gingerness and the paleness of me and the beard and everything.
Yeah.
And so I kept taking these photos. I can send it to you later. I think it's on my Instagram.
Yeah,
photos.
I saw one. It's awesome. Go ahead.
Where I don't know why this happened, but I would tuck my beard into my hat and it was covered my face and it would just be like a nose poking out sometimes.
Right.
And I would be taking it with like thumbs up with all these people around in the Ethiopia. It was very fun. Yeah.
So before we get out of here, now, first of all, one, I want to thank you for your time, man. I could talk to you all night.
And of course.
I'd love to have you on again in the future.
Anytime.
We were emailing back and forth, okay? And we always email one of the with our guest list, blah 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 blah. And one of them says a hippo attack survivor, okay?
And that's how your brother sold it to me as well too.
Oh.
Like he listed that. It's like they've had some famous musicians, athletes. They like to get people that aren't, you know, necessarily like the singer of the band, just someone interesting.
Right.
And also they had a guy who got attacked by a hippo.
And I emailed you back. I said, I love that the hippo attack always like sticks out more than anything we've ever done. It's always like, mm-hmm. That's our first like grab, like a hippo attack survivor. Now, you emailed me back. You said, very excited. It may not have been attacked by animals, but you have at least one ridiculous goat sacrifice and pooping story from filming a movie in Africa. I can't let that just go by. What are you talking about?
Okay, it was a weird day. Okay, so I guess this does, I do have to paint a picture here.
Okay.
So 2013, I went with my best friend and filmed a movie in Africa. And this wasn't a documentary. It was a movie. The producer and writer of this is a guy named Joey Lawrence. He's from Canada. He lives in New York. You should look him up. He's a brilliant photographer.
Mm-hmm.
And he's always photographing like war-torn ISIS worlds and
right.
all of these very, very, like, he gets deeply immersed in these worlds. And so he had visited the Omo Valley region of Ethiopia. It's very southern Ethiopia. And he developed a relationship with these people. And so he wanted to write a coming-of-age story around these people and have them act in this movie. These people have never seen a movie, much less acted in one. You know what I mean?
Right.
So we all fly out there. We got a hodgepodge crew of people from California, people from Britain, and people, you know, from Canada. It was all around. It was great. And so we get down there, and it's like the fourth or fifth day. I think this is all in one day, actually. So this is a crazy day. So we start, and we're filming sunrise at this beautiful like overlook of the Omo River, and we have there's like this tribe is one like big, I can't remember the name of it right now, I'm horrible, umbrella of a name of a tribe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we have different villages that are mm-hmm. in this tribe, and we brought over this one actor from a different village to this other village because it was more cinematic, right?
Right.
And so we're going out to film, and we have a translator there, and we're going out to film, and the village elders come out and they're like, You cannot film here. You cannot film today. This man is not from our tribe. Why is he here filming in our tribe? And so the translator guy's like, oh, well, this isn't a documentary. This is a movie. So in the movie, it appears that you're all from the same village. You know what I mean? And they just couldn't wrap their head around it. So they had this meeting that lasted like 3 or 4 hours. Our light's gone. That was the time we had to shoot that moment. You know what I mean?
Right.
So we're all just like, fuck, man, like that whole day was ruined. So we go back to the camp. And like I said, this is day 4 or 5. And there's toilets out there. And so I hadn't pooped yet. Didn't really want to just go poop over the hill.
Because
you just go poop over this hill. Like everyone goes there. There's just tons of poop on the ground.
So poop,
it's like
hill.
Poop bombs everywhere.
Right.
Yeah. And so I was like, we finished that morning and I go over. I'm like, all right, guys, I got to do it. I grabbed the coffee. I hadn't had coffee in days. I grab the toilet paper. I'm just ready for what may come. And so I have a sip of coffee. We have the breakfast. And I'm like, oh, okay, I got to go. See ya. So I wish I was with you guys because the action doing or reenacting this is the best part. But maybe not. So
I thought you meant you were hoping you were with us at this poop moment. I'm like, I don't really wish I was with you.
Verbal Shenanigans live here in Africa.
Here's Porter.
Porter McKnight has a special announcement of sorts.
It might have been good to have protection, as you're about to hear.
Okay.
So I get this perfect spot. My butt's faced downhill. My head's faced uphill. You know what I mean? Facing that way. I even find like this small little like root. Like small tree bud bush thing, to hold on so I don't fucking fall down the hill onto my own shit.
I'm just and, picturing Chris Farley. Hold on, little root. Hold on.
Very similar. Reference. And so I'm like, I'm pants down, trowel dropped or whatever, and I'm about to let loose, and this girl comes up, like, and I didn't see her at first. All of a sudden, she's just there. I'm like, hello. I'm like, oh. like, I said, hey, which they would say, like, they would tell us to say this. It's just like, get out of here, go on, you know? And so she's just like, okay. And like walks to the right. She's holding an apple, by the way. She walks over the hill. And I'm like, she's out of view. I'm like, okay, fucking hell. So I like get my next perfect spot and look around and no one's there. My pants are down. The floodgates have opened. And I look to my right. And just over the curve of the hill, I see the little girl's head, just her head, eating the apple and staring at me. As the poop is coming out of my hole.
Yes.
Have any of you had like another human being watch poop come out of you as an adult?
Not out of me.
And there's nothing I can do at this point, right?
Yeah.
There's nothing I can do at this point.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that happened. That was my poop story. And then, so we finished filming later on.
See, now I thought the story was one thing. I'm like, when is he going to poop? And when is this goat going to show up during this experience? And this is going to get crazy. The girl with the apple is going to sacrifice.
I need to rewrite the story. Who doesn't like some fiction? So later we filmed some stuff. Later on that evening, the elders come back and they're like, guys, we're so sorry that we ruined your shoot this morning. We're going to kill this goat for you. And they hand our producer a knife.
Wow.
And they're like, here you go. And he's just like, oh, fuck, I have to do this, don't I? Mm. And we're all seated on this table, the whole tribe's around. And he's trying to, you know, cut the throat of this goat. And the knife is it's a fucking butter knife. It has no teeth. There's nothing. So he's just sawing and it's not doing anything. And the goat's just wailing. So like, oh my God. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and so eventually they like felt sorry for us. And they took the knife away and they had like, they got it and they like had a bowl under it. They were catching the blood.
Yep.
And the craziest looking motherfucker in the whole bunch is like, we're all seated at one side of the table, you know, kind of like what's the Last Supper look type of thing, you know,
just right.
Mm-hmm. You know, without Jesus, I guess. And he like has this bowl and is like offering it to us and stares everyone in the eyes and everyone's like cowers and looks away and looks away and looks away. And he just goes down the line and he gets to me and I'm just staring at him.
Yes.
And I hold the eyes and I'm like, oh, thank you. And he keeps staring. He stares at me for like 10 more seconds.
Oh.
Eats my soul.
Oh.
And then passes on. And then the next guy next to me is like, no, I'm good. And so the guy just stares at us and chugs this bowl of blood.
Yes.
Yeah. And then we ate the goat. Very strange thing. And also right after that, going back to beard stuff, while they had, you know, quartered this goat and stuck him on sticks around a campfire, this super drunk guy, because they had a bar somehow in the middle of this place. There was no power there, but they had a bar. We were terrified of this place. We did not go to that section. Drunk dude comes up and was like, essentially wanted some of my beard. So I pulled out my pocket knife, cut off part of my beard, and he started shoving little bits of my beard in his beard and smiling with his drunk, toothless grin.
Oh, God. He's definitely got like a voodoo doll of you somewhere. Like every time.
Oh, for sure.
Every time you get like cramps on stage, he's just poking your beard in Africa.
So.
Wow.
Well. It was a good day.
You know, like you did the art for the last album. I'm thinking, you know, if you need art for the next album, maybe illustrating that whole scene for everybody. The girl with the apple, you holding onto the root, all that stuff. The bar.
And blood guy.
Yeah, the blood guy. Fantastic album.
I need to write some sort of children's book. Or some, I don't know.
I don't know about a children's book, but.
Everybody poops in weird places.
Everybody poops. like respect. I don't know. Maybe it's too. Maybe it's a series, and I'll leave out the sacrifice of the young adult part.
Porter, I want to thank you so much for giving us the time, man. I'd love to have you on again in the future. I wish you guys the best of luck. The new album is freaking cool, man. And I hope you have fun on tour. And just thanks for coming on, man. It's been a great time. I really enjoyed the interview.
Whenever I have too. Thank you guys. Whenever we come near y'all again, just let me know and I'll get you on the list. Let's hang out.
Sounds good. I know you're coming in the summer, actually. I think me and Tim might come down, so.
That's perfect. Can't wait to meet y'all.
Ah, Berlo, one of my favorites of the year.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, he came with Helling pooping down hell. I mean, we didn't get that from everybody. So.
No. I wanted to ask John Walsh, have you ever pooped down a hill? But it just didn't feel right, you know? You know what I mean?
You need that perfect moment. And
but, I mean, if that doesn't tell you, I mean, like, you know, we've interviewed, like, this year has been our hottest year as far as musicians, that's for sure.
Definitely.
And if that doesn't tell you, these last couple interviews, that, like, people are just the same as you, the same, you know, they're just very normal people, life experience. And I love when a person just doesn't take themselves too seriously and is fun and has a zest for life. And he reminds, like, when he was talking about, like, I can't do just one thing, like, can you ever see yourself, like, that would be like if you had asked me the question, can you see yourself not doing the podcast or not doing comedy for a while or even like taking hikes or something like that, like to cut out like a piece of your life would be very, very hard for me, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
so no matter what it is, it doesn't matter, but like to be like, can you not do, could you see yourself not doing music? I'm sure to him, even if it wasn't a Treyu, it would be something else or something else or something else, you know?
Yeah. It's not just something he does. It's another passion in his life. And that's the key thing. You could tell he's really enjoying life and trying out different things, you know?
Yeah. So that is Porter McKnight from Treyu. Go check out their latest album, which came out a little while ago. And definitely go see them on tour, especially if you were in New Jersey. And bro, this was one of our first, I guess, intersections of two podcast guests. We got a story about the other one on the show. So we had Porter talking about Ed from Thrice and how they play World of Warcraft together. So
we'll have 7 degrees of shenanigans now.
Correct. I feel like that'll all start from someone has some weird Lenny Dykstra story. Every person we talk to, like, I remember the time I saw him in my town. But Porter McKnight, everybody. Hey guys, real quick, I just want to tell you about something we're kind of involved in now, and I want you to hear all about it because it's a great app. Now, do you like Verbal Shenanigans? Well, the PodCoin app pays you to listen to this podcast and every podcast. It's the podcast player that pays. Just get the PodCoin app on iPhone or Android. It's free, super easy to use. Now, you can get that PodCoin app, and you can claim gift cards. You could donate to charity. It's literally amazing. It turns your podcast listening into charity or, like I said, gift cards like Amazon or Starbucks gift cards. I use the PodCoin app to do all my podcast listening now, and I love it. Go get it on the App Store, on iTunes, or on Android today. Seriously, just go to the PodCoin app and use the invite code Shenanigans, and you'll get 300 PodCoins just for signing up. That's 300 PodCoins just for signing up if you use the code Shenanigans. So go give the PodCoin app a try today. All right, back to the show. All right, Mike, that is Porter McKnight.
One of the most awesome names ever. I feel if they put out Roadhouse 3, he would be the main character.
I feel like even in like your wheelhouse, like Dukes of Hazzard, there could have been a Porter McKnight on that show.
Yeah, but he that kind of name, he might have been the evil one. Like, oh, Boss Hall got a contractor in and all. Oh, Porter McKnight, he destroyed Uncle Jesse's farm. No! Damn that Porter McKnight.
See? So he could be in there.
I didn't say he couldn't, but he'd have to be evil.
Do you ever go to bed happy, like thinking that you interviewed Bo Duke?
I'm pleased with everything that came around. I mean, it was definitely a highlight. I'm not sitting back here in tears and all. I'm not going to be on my deathbed telling the doctors, I interviewed Bo Duke. Sir, this is, you're 98 years old. We have no clue who you're talking about right now.
Did he settle his divorce yet? Bro, what do you got? What do you got?
A little small thing and all, kind of interesting. Out of the blue, I found out apparently I'm a fire warden.
Yeah, that sounds safe for anybody involved.
Yeah. But I walked into work one day and my boss pulled me aside. He's like, do you know you're the fire warden for this place? And I'm like, no, that's a bit intriguing item. So what apparently happened was, They were trying to figure out who they were going to put down as a name and forgot I was no longer part of the group, but still without telling me, they just officially put down my name as the fire warden for my company. And apparently I got hundreds of lives in my hands right now.
Now you should say, you know, I am the fire warden. I should be paid accordingly.
Yeah, I think it's a volunteer thing. I mean, at least I'm hoping so, because if a fire happens, I don't know. You know, I'm a volunteer. Sorry, guys, you're on your own.
Right. Well, now, what are the jobs of the fire warden? Do you know?
I don't even technically know yet. They still have to put me into training, which is making it more odd how I made it onto official piece of paper as the warden of record.
Now, You should just send them a couple links to some of our shows and see if they're confident still after listening to an episode to allow you to be the fire warden.
I don't mind it. It's something to add to the resume, and I look forward to learning it. It's just more the fact that the name got on the piece of paper before the whole let's make an agreement item occurred. Hey, by the way, if a fire breaks out, stay here.
I like that you're already thinking, like, I could put this on my resume. Maybe I could start at fire warden and work my way up to, like, fire king of Georgia.
Yeah.
Solid name, solid title.
Fire king of Georgia.
Well, Burlo,
I got a book to write right now.
Well, Burlo, I mean, since you are the fire warden, I think it's only appropriate that you take the fire safety quiz.
Oh, damn, you're quick.
Yeah. Well, obviously everything in the show is pre-planned. No, actually, this was not. So let's see how it goes. Burlo, are you ready for the fire safety quiz? Now, I will tell you. All right. So there was 4,229 people have responded to this quiz, and 49.8% have got it correct.
Oh, okay.
So will you fall above, you know, it's basically 50%. It's basically a pass or fail. That's kind of what it is right now. All right. If your clothes catch on fire, Burlo, you must not A, find a safety shower, B, stop where you are, drop and roll, C, run, or D, cover your face with your hands and protect it from the flames.
This is what not to do.
If your clothes catch on fire, you must not A, find a safety shower, B, stop where you are, drop and roll, C, run, or D, cover your face with your hands and protect it from the flames.
I'm going to say C, Scotty.
Okay. Correct, Burlo. You are one for one. You're on your roll to being fire, on the way to being fire king of Georgia.
I'm the perfect fire warden right now. Nothing can stop me.
What's nice, too, is, like, if they question their decision, like, and you do well on this, you could be like, listen to, you can kill two birds.
You can see I'm qualified and enjoy Porter McKnight. Remember that.
You can subscribe at, you know, you can get listens, Burlo, and, you know, more credit to be the fire warden.
All right. Exactly.
What does the below symbol indicate about a material? Now, I'm just going to explain it to you because you can't see this at the moment. All right. It is a red circle with a flame in the middle. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Red circle, flame in the middle. Does it mean it is flammable, it is corrosive, it may explode, or it is toxic?
I'm going to say A, it's flammable.
A, it is flammable, is correct, Mike Berlow.
All right.
You, all those years of watching Beavis and Butthead, you
fire,
are...
Fire.
I think what's sad is that's not the first time I've heard you do Beavis. That's the 300th time I've heard you do Beavis.
Yeah, that was another short-lived nickname of Michael Berlew. That was my AOL name, Beavis Berlew, if you recall. BVS Berlew.
That's one of those things you might want to like bury on that episode.
Nah, I'm proud of it. I'm going to put that on the resume with the fireboarding thing.
Right under, okay.
You can contact me at BeavisBerlew@AOL.com. I'm up with the times in IT.
Berlew, it's another what does this sign mean? Because I did not test this, obviously. I brought it up 14 mm-hmm. seconds ago. All right, it is a fire hose with a drop falling on the edge of a fire. Okay, red sign with a yellow fire hose and a little drop going on the edge of the fire. Okay,
mm-hmm.
What does it mean? Does it mean A, assemble here if there's a fire? B, the fire alarm is located here? C, the fire hose reel is located here? Or D, the fire exit is located here?
I'm going to say C, Scotty.
Okay. The fire hose reel is located here. Correct, Berlew. 3 for 3 on your way to being the fire warden.
Ah, this is such an honor. I should be the verbal shenanigans fire warden while I'm at it. Scott, I want to tell you there's no fire behind you right now. You may continue.
Now, I want to know the idiots that scored less than 50% on this so far.
Yeah, but I'm starting to worry about this right now. It's like those ones you see on Facebook, like only the top 10% can get this. And like, it's like the genius easy questions.
Which is,
what is a dog?
All right. Berlew, true or false, you should not pull the fire alarm before you try to contain the fire. A, true. B, false.
Repeat that question one more time.
You should not pull the fire alarm before you have tried to contain the fire.
I'm going to say true.
Berlew, I'm sorry. That is false.
Oh, that is false.
You can definitely pull that fire alarm before you contain the fire. You can do whatever you got to do to pull that fire alarm. Help is on the way.
Gotcha.
All right, Berlew.
I'm aware now. I'm going to pull it tomorrow just to say... Yep, it's good.
Guys, as the fire warden here, I'm allowed to do this.
I got to test this. On the clock. Boom.
I'm picturing all the sprinklers going off and you ruining the entire IT. Like, oh, the fire marshal. He had to do it. All right. Berlew, this is up your alley as the fire marshal and knowing you. You got to get this.
All right.
Those with a service animal should practice fire drills with their service animal. Yes or no?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Obviously, that is yes. 84% of people got that question correct.
Listen, I know you're blind, but we got a drill to perform, and I don't want you stumbling over this dog right here.
Here's what I need you to do. Take your Labrador and snuff the fire out with his body.
Dear helper monkeys, I have a question for you as a fire warden of my new company.
Do they know how to use a hose?
The monkeys in the fire while we evacuate.
Where should you aim a fire extinguisher nozzle when putting out the fire? Okay. At the top of the fire, at the base of the fire, at the center of the fire, or away from the fire?
At the base.
And the base. He's all about the base, and he is correct.
Woo!
Berlew, you are 5 for 6. All right, which of the following should you not do during a fire emergency? Evacuate a building through designated exit routes. Keep fire doors shut to prevent the fire from spreading. Crawl low under the smoke while breathing only through your nose. Or D, re-enter the building without the permission of authorities.
Which you should not do? I'm guessing D.
86% of people got this correct. I'm guessing this is a quiz for not the smartest of people, which is also fine.
That's a fine warning. I got to check to see if it's still in there.
Okay. I don't know if you're going to know this one.
All right.
We're going to do 10 questions. I don't know how long this is, but we're going to do 10 total.
All right.
What does the E in race indicate when responding to a fire? So R-A-C-E. Is that A, extinguish, B, evacuate, C, employ?
I'm going to say evacuate.
Sorry, Burlow. Not correct. I'm going to give you this, though, because this one says it could be two. I'll give this to you. You are correct. It says it can be A and B. I guess you can check off more than one thing. It is extinguish or evacuate. Extinguish or see, damn it, that's not a great question.
No.
Okay, so
not fire warden approved.
Yeah, Burrow, I'm giving it to you. You're 7 for 8.
All right, woo!
Is it safe to break open a window if you're trapped inside a high rise building on fire? This is how I know this quiz is. This is perfect, and I'm going to take a screenshot of this. But, Burlow, is it safe to break open a window if you are trapped inside a high-rise building on fire? A, yes. B, false. that's fantastic. What do you got?
I'm going to say false.
False is correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you gotta get the hell out of there no matter how what you gotta do. All right, Burley, you are 8 for 9. Last question. Only 40% of people got this correct. When using a fire extinguisher, how far away should you stand from the fire? Ooh. Okay. A, 4 feet, B, 5 feet, C, 6 feet, D, 7 feet, and Burlow, E, 8 feet.
I think it's 6 feet.
Burlew, 6 feet is incorrect.
Oh.
The answer is 8 feet away. See, I feel like the fire warden would have known that one.
Well, I got long arms, so I can be 6 feet, but pull it back 2 feet. Okay. So that would still work mathematically.
Well, Burlew, according to our department, hold on. They're saying 80% is a pass, and Burlew, you are allowed to be the Georgia IT fire marshal warden.
Oh, it's an honor, Scotty. I mean, that's the one reason why I came down here. It wasn't even for the job. It was literally become the fire king of Georgia.
solid title.
You know, I'm going to get some Spanx with some flames on it so everybody knows who the fire king is. You know, I can show it off.
Well, now it's going far.
I'll send you pictures on Instagram.
Now it got a little weird.
They declare it.
Now it got a little weird. But fire king.
I don't see how.
Fire king, it's time to get the hell out of here. You got anything to promote?
I guess I will do our friends John Trumbull and Darren Patterson, the SNL nerds. Every week they do a review of SNL episodes or do a best of episode when they're off. The guys go through all the skits, go through banter. They're really in depth about their history. They love the show, and you'll enjoy the show. They're on nonproductive.com, or you can look them up on any of your podcast platforms. Look up SNL nerds.
Yeah, and I got to give John Trumbull a shout out, depending on when this podcast comes out. Either way, him and our good friend Mike Morse will be doing they'll be doing caricatures at my wedding. They'll be drawing caricatures of people.
Oh.
So I hired both of them. It's weird enough that I know
Did you hire every comedian you know
correct.
For this wedding?
Correct. correct. It's weird enough that I know one guy who does caricatures, never mind being able to find two. And I'm glad to have them there. So, and then I will promote another comedian, Mike, from New Jersey, a good friend of the show and good friend of mine, Joe Fernandez. Joe Fernandez, been on the show.
What job will you have at your wedding?
just guest. Guest 8 or whatever the hell. It is, but he just put up a new – he's going to do a new video podcast. He hasn't decided if it's weekly or biweekly or whatever, but go check out End Shit with Joe Fernandez. First episode went up today on YouTube. So go check him out and subscribe, Joe Fernandez with an S, and check out End Shit and check out – I guess I might as well promote his other podcast, All in Our Heads with Mike Gaffney. So
Scott, just remember, if a fire breaks out during your wedding, to call me. I'll be up there in 17 hours.
You used to say the same thing when you were in Jersey, so...
I just assume I can put a flaring light on the top of my car and just blast 100 miles an hour through South Carolina. I think they're cool with that.
That's fine.
It's okay, I'm a fire warden. Let me go.
You should ask that. Do you get a fire warden, like, parking pass or, like, you could park in the handicap spots or something at the mall. Like I think you should get fire warden privileges.
Exactly.
I'm telling you,
I won the whole shebang.
When we were doing that Shenanigans Showdown and I got the officiant thing, in that packet came officiant parking thing that I could have put on my my car, so not too far fetched.
Too bad you couldn't marry somebody.
Yeah.
Second placer.
Yeah, well, there's always next year, Berlo, or the year after that, or the year after that. But, guys, it's our time to get the hell out of here. If you liked what you heard, please check us out and like, and also check out the other podcasts on things like the BS Podcast Network, on Discovery County Network, which is an internet radio station, on comingrightup.org. And, Berlo, hit him with it.
WHBJ-DB, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Cutting Edge Radio.
So we're in a lot of places. Also, please interact with us on Twitter, Instagram. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you don't like. And that's it, guys. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.